Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Dracena Wines on Wine. In this series, I sit down with a person in the wine industry and provide a behind-the-scenes look at what they do. Today, I sat down with Berlin Crystal Kelly of Proud Pour Wines. I spotted a tweet about Proud Pour on Twitter one day and immediately was drawn to their story. I have an undergrad degree in biology, but I specialized in marine biology. My true love are cetaceans, but I love pretty much all animals. I used to dream, I might still have dreams, about being Dr. Doolittle and being able to speak to the animals. So when I saw that Proud Pour helps to save oysters and bees by selling wine, I had to hear and share their story. Berlin Kelly founded Proud Pour in 2014 as a way to connect her passion for high-quality, sustainable foods and wines with her concern for the environment. I hope you enjoy the interview, and if you do, please remember, swipe to subscribe and share. Thanks a lot. Sláinte. Thank you very much for joining Dracena Wines on Wine.
And thank you for having me.
Yes, and you're in Oregon now?
I live in Oregon, yeah, okay. But right now I'm in New York. I've been on a little bit of a whirlwind, so I went from Utah to New York City, and I'm in Hunter Mountain right now. I go down to Philly on Monday, and then back up to New York, and then San Francisco, and then Portland, then Vashon Island, then Seattle, then I'm back in Portland for a couple of weeks before heading to Mexico. So it's
oh my gosh! And is that all for the winery?
Yeah, so just different ways of connecting with people. So yeah.
Wow, that's out of control. That is really out of control. I think it's bad enough. So I live in New Jersey, winery and Paso Robles. So I fly back and forth to California pretty much once a month, and that's insane. Like, so I can't, I still have a full-time job that pays for the winery. So
awesome.
I can't, I'm waiting for the day that I can do winery 100% of the time and travel all over to promote us even more. But in the meantime of your very busy schedule, thank you for joining.
Yeah, of course.
So you actually started Proud Pour in 2014 after watching a documentary called Shell Shocked.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. it's so funny that you mentioned that, because yesterday I saw the director and producer of that movie who became my friend. I saw her at the New York City Environmental Film Festival. So, So should I tell you about that movie a little bit?
Yeah. Cause I honestly don't know anything about it.
Yeah. So it was interesting. I was working in finance in New York City, and I was drinking every night. That's kind of what you do in New York City after work. You go and you get a drink at your local whatever with friends. And then I go home after having a couple of drinks and watch some TED Talk. And this night happened to be Shell Shocked, which was Saving Oysters to Save Ourselves. And I was like, wow, like, you know, I buy Tom's shoes and Warby Parker and feed bags and Bombas socks and all these social mission-based products in the apparel industry, but there's nothing in the alcohol industry. And you know, it'd be really cool if we could drink something to make a change. And it was local and it's tangible. So this movie Shell Shocked is about restoring oyster reefs in New York Harbor and how that would have this cascading effect and affect everything else, bringing not only birds, crabs, seahorses, you know, shrimp back and everything to the harbor, but also clean water and prevent flooding and erosion from things like Hurricane Sandy. So then from there, I went to the Billion Oyster Project in New York, New Jersey Baykeeper and said, would we be able to restore a certain amount of money for a certain amount of oysters or a certain amount of money? And they said yes. So I used my financial background to model out something and predict, you know, costs. And I was actively homebrewing, so I had friends in the New York City Homebrewers Guild that could kind of tell me how much it would cost to do something. And that's kind of where it all started.
Wow. That's amazing. Because quite honestly, We'll get to the bees in a second, but that's what caught my eye was the bees.
Mm-hmm, the bees, yeah.
And I don't, it's like, I love animals all over, whatever. And I have my undergrad and graduate degree is in biology. Mm-hmm. So my dream job was to work with the dolphins at SeaWorld until until I saw what the pay was at SeaWorld. So I have that background, and I honestly never thought about oysters as needing to be saved. I do know how big of an impact they make on the world, mm-hmm. but I actually never knew that they were in need of being saved. And that's kind of cool.
I would say not saved, because they're pretty much gone. So it would be more rebuilt. It's kind of like the forest, like as if the forest had been destroyed. And that's kind of what we've done to oyster reefs. We've lost 95% across America. So the saving is kind of not, not going to happen. It's more rebuilding them. And and all the oysters you eat now are farmed. Mm-hmm. So keep eating oysters. The cleanest oysters you can have are those from farms, because they clean water. Unlike, salmon or tilapia, which pollute water. So having a lot of them in a concentrated area is bad. Having a lot of oysters in a concentrated area is good, because it has very clean water. So the cleanest oysters you can get are from farms. And then we collect those farmed oyster shells and use them as the foundation to rebuild the reefs. So that's kind of our process. And then once we rebuild the reefs, we're getting back all of these ecosystems and cleaning the water. So
That is fantastic. That really is. And I have to say, I didn't realize I knew the oysters that people eat. I don't eat them. They kind of freak me out.
Yeah.
I'm a very finicky eater. I realize that they're all from farms, but I didn't realize that in natural habitat, they were diminished or gone. And that's really kind of sad. And is that from the pollution? Because we've been farming oysters for like
a while.
Yeah.
So we lost these oysters in, it depends on the region, but around 1910 in New York Harbor, they were all gone. We were down to 10%. Of our historical populations, which had been growing there, by the way, for 300 million years. So we efficiently wiped them out in 70 years. We're very, very efficient species. We wiped them out in 70, and then there was 10% left, which we then dumped our sewage on. And then people were like, oh, oysters make you sick, not realizing that they're filter feeders and they clean the ocean. And when you put sewage on a filter feeder, they're going to take in that sewage. So, fish, for example, you eat the muscle part, not the intestinal organs of a fish, where, oysters are basically eating the whole body. So if there's toxins, you're going to get that. We lost them all and are now in the process of rebuilding them. And we've been able to restore with our project alone, 8 million oysters across America. So that's pretty exciting.
Congratulations. That is fantastic. That I am all for anything. I honestly don't know where I saw you. I think somehow it popped up on Twitter or something that I saw it. And I was like, I tweeted you right away. I'm like, oh my God, I love your story. This is like amazing. Like anything that saves the environment is like near and dear to me. I'm a true believer that we have to respect nature. And not mm-hmm. enough of us do. We take everything for granted, and it's eventually going to come back and bite us in more ways than it already is.
Yeah. It's funny, because people say, we have to save the planet. And I often use that phrase as well, but I don't think the planet really needs saving. There's no way we can destroy the planet. We can destroy our possibility to exist on the planet. And then after we're gone, the Earth will probably very quickly regenerate itself without us on it. Let's maintain the planet. Let's maintain a planet that we can survive in.
Excellent. So you came up with the name Proud Poor, and mm-hmm. I think it's an awesome name, and I think it's a perfect name. But how did that name come to you? Why that name?
Yeah. So I wanted something. I had this whole Google sheet. Okay, so not a Google sheet, an Excel sheet. And I wanted something with alliteration, first of all. So I was looking for something, and I had one column of adjectives and one column of nouns, and I was kind of just like matching them up left and right. And I wanted something that would be applicable to more than just wine, because we're actually planning to do a Pilsner for sea turtles and a whiskey for wolves and a cider for soil health. So, you know, kind of these different things that you can drink and help your local environment, no matter what you enjoy drinking. So I was thinking like good grapes, or, you know, like proud pints or something. And then proud pour was one of those. And there was, the domain name was open. It was open on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. So I just said, great, let's go for it.
You know, people who just use their names for Twitter, or people who aren't in industry, I guess, don't realize how important that is. Like, you mm-hmm. know, when you're, we were coming up with Dracaena Wines, we had a name that we wanted to use, but we couldn't use it because there was another winery in Virginia that had a similar name. And we were like, all right, they're going to come after us, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Dracaena is named after Draco, who was named after the constellation. And so we were trying to do a constellation thing, and that sure as heck isn't happening in the wine world with constellation, you know? So it is, it's tough to come up with a creative name, a name that you can brand, a name that you can do. And then you have to make sure that you can, I can get it on Twitter. I can get it on social media, you mm-hmm. know, across the social media.
Because if you can't connect with people and they can't find you, then how can they find your wine and hear your story?
Right, right. So it is a tough thing. But I can envision the, we didn't use Excel spreadsheets, but we kind of had the same concept of where can we go, what can we do, and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. All the fun stuff behind the scenes before you even get started, right?
Yeah. Totally.
So bees and oysters, and then you actually already said, and you piqued my interest with wolves, because I love wolves, and my husband Mike adores wolves. So is what's next in line? You said sea turtles, which I love.
You know, it's really funny because I've been kind of working on an awesome Pilsner infused with nori, like a kelp, to give it kind of the salty Pilsner and Goza style awesome beer. So it's got kind of that sea vibe, and it helps sea turtles. But, you know, Whiskey for Wolves really stands out in people's minds. And we've made some connections with some amazing bourbon distillers down in Kentucky. So we might just catapult straight to that and do the whiskey next. I mean, people, you know, it's kind of, we kind of want to launch with these ideas that people can get on board with, and then say like, okay, you love wolves and we can help them through this, but like the sea turtles also need help, and soil also needs help, and these different things. So,
So once you catch them, like you catch the people who like the bees, and then they see, you know, I mean, I don't think somebody who appreciates bees or somebody who appreciates wolves is turning their head to anything else. So they find you because of their near and dear animal, but then they see that you're doing these other, you know, helpful things, and you can expand with them. So Whiskey for Wolves does sound pretty darn good.
I know. Yeah. I'm excited. It's, that'll be fun. That'll be interesting for sure.
Okay. So going to your Sauvignon Blanc. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you source all your fruit, right? You do mm-hmm. not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't have land. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you source your fruit. Where is your Sauvignon Blanc coming from?
So we work with a small farmer up in Mendocino County. And so, just small up production. We just got organic certification, so that's awesome. And stainless steel, organically grown, make it vegan, no additives. As you know, the wine industry can add a lot of different things, whether it's citric acid, tartaric acid, grape concentrates, mega purples, sweeteners, whatever needs to be done. And we just kind of let the fruit be fruit, you know, let the grapes shine the way they are. And some people say, oh, this Sauvignon Blanc's not acidic enough, or this Pinot Noir looks too light. And we're like, well, that's just what it is. what the grape turned out as. So we're going to keep it that way and embrace it and love it for what we got. So
where you're sourcing it from, is that where it's also being produced, or do you have a winery somewhere that the fruit gets sent to?
Yeah, no, we also, we do produce it in the same area, but a lot of times we'll move it for bottling. So if we need to bottle it, and then of course where we store it is different. If we can do it all in the same place, even better, but not always is there a space. So
right. Okay. So yeah. How many vintages of the Sauvignon Blanc have you?
This is the fourth. I think we had a 2012, 2014, 2016, then this 2016 organic that we got the certification on. So I guess three vintages, but yeah.
Three vintages. And then have you always been sourcing from the same vineyard site?
Or no, do you rotate? We keep moving forward a little bit until, you know, it's kind of like dating in high school. You get one, you're like, okay, yeah, but this one's a little bit better. So we're going to work with these people now. So we've been kind of moving forward towards better grapes, better practices over the last, 4 years. So.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. We started ours on the west side of Paso, and then we were able to, in 2015, we were able to meet Joe Plummer, who is on the east side, and it was like love at first sight for me. I adore this man. He is like amazing. And so, yeah, I get it. You find a better connection, not necessarily saying one fruit's better than the other, but there's a connection and all of that, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the practices too, like some people are more thoroughly dedicated to, right. The vision that we have. So, right. Yeah.
And how many,
which is hard to do.
How many cases of the Sauvignon Blanc?
We do about 3,000 cases a year.
Oh, wow.
And 2,000 of the Pinot Noir. So, yeah.
Oh, you went big. Quick. Right?
We have distribution now in 14 states, and our mission is really to restore oyster reefs, and get as many people on board with that as possible.
That's phenomenal, because we're nowhere near that. We're at like 250 cases, but it is just us. Do you have a crew? How many people work for Proud Pour?
Well, we don't do direct to consumer. So, our margins are pretty small. It's just me and my business partner. And then we have one person that helps us out, and then we hire a bunch of people. So we like hire website developer, we hire brand ambassadors to do tastings, and we hire, whoever else. We don't have people, really on payroll except for, so.
Okay. Okay. Well, that I 5,000 cases. I'm like blown away. So each bottle purchased of the Pinot, right? The Sauvignon Blanc is for the oysters, and the Pinot is for the bees, right?
Yep, that's correct. Okay.
So each bottle purchased allows 100 wild oysters to be restored. How actually? Walk us through that process. So I buy a bottle of your wine.
Yeah. So it starts with, each bottle starts with 1,000 spat, which are baby oysters that we can purchase. And then those spat, we collect shells. So the projects we work with collect shells through, for example, in New York City, the Billion Oyster Project goes around to all the cities in New York and collects their oyster shells left over from people's dinners. And then they cure those shells outside for 6 to 12 months. So all the bacteria and any harmful substances that might, hurt the ecosystem of the water have died off in that time through the sun, wind, and rain and snow. And then those oysters get put into bags, which get put into tanks with the baby oysters, the 1,000 spat that we bought for that one bottle. And those spats settle on the shells and they start to grow. And so that's kind of how oyster reefs form. They create these ecosystems, these habitats where all this different marine life lives on those oysters. So.
And where is that happening?
All over New York Harbor, all over New York Harbor. So up and down the shoreline of the East River, Hudson River, Gowanus Canal, Jamaica Bay, off of the off of the financial district and like where the Statue of Liberty is in Staten Island. So everywhere around New York Harbor.
Oh, that was awesome. Okay. Things I have no clue are going on right in like pretty much my own backyard here.
That's why I started. It was like, we had no idea. Like, you know, do you know how much New York spends on wine per night? New York Metro?
I'm afraid to. I'm sure it's a lot.
Yep. $31 million is spent on wine per night in New York Metro. And we're totally unaware. I mean, myself included, was totally unaware of these projects that are happening right at our feet. And the fact that New York used to have more oysters than anywhere in the world. There was 220,000 acres of oyster reefs. They're totally wiped out. And these oyster reefs, if we got them back, would completely change our lives. Mm-hmm. We'd be able to swim in the water. We'd be able to fish from the water. We'd have a totally different life if we engaged with the environment around us and knew how to take care of it. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay. And now, let's go to the bees, right? Mm-hmm. So, the Pinot allows for 875 wildflowers to be planted on farms, which really is there to allow the flowers to grow, to allow the bees to pollinate and to do their thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So where is the Pinot fruit from?
That's Oregon. So we work with another father-son team in Umpqua Valley in Oregon. So that's where we grow that. It's awesome. They're great. They're kind of hippies. Like, it's funny, when I first connected with him, he was like, you know, you called me twice. So that's pretty cool. I like that. So, you know, let's talk about working together. I'm like, okay. Like, all right. So I flew out to Oregon. I was living in New York at the time. I flew out and we hung out for the day and spent some time together and got to know each other. So yeah, it's great. They're great out there, and it's organically grown. No insecticide or pesticides used, and just kind of stewards of the land. So.
And where are you planting the flowers?
Along at farms. So we work with different farms across America. So if you buy the wine in New York, it goes to farms in New York. If you buy it in Oregon, it goes to farms in Oregon. Same thing with our oyster projects. We have projects all across the United States. So wherever if you buy the wine in Seattle, it goes to Puget Sound. If you buy it in in DC, it goes to Chesapeake Bay, New York City, New York Harbor, et cetera. So same thing with the farms and the flowers. Wherever you buy it, it goes to that local farm. And then for every bottle we are planting, we get 3,500 seeds, wildflower seeds. And then we assume with wind, rain, mold, insects, whatever, we will lose a maximum, like worst case scenario, we'll lose up to 75%. And so that's how we get to the 875 wildflowers per bottle is, you know, 25% of 3,500. Right. So
that, you know what, that's even more awesome in my eyes, is that you're localizing where you're helping the region. So the people mm-hmm. in New York are helping New York, and the people in DC are helping DC. That brings that tangent out there to, you know, near and dear to somebody, where I can really be helping my own, you know, my own place.
And that was part of the reason when I was first starting this, I was looking for a tangible, local, fixable cause, because, you know, Tom's Shoes is wonderful, but how much cooler would it be that instead of a kid in a different continent on the opposite side of the equator getting a pair of shoes, it was actually a kid in our own city, you know, like it would make us feel that much more connected and be like, oh, well, I gave him shoes, and that's just kind of the impetus for doing more. You know, it's like, oh, well, maybe I should help him out with tutoring, or maybe I should see if I can help him get into a good school or help him whatever, you know, like, and I just felt, for me, you know, we're so disconnected from our environment. You know, New York's biggest park is the harbor, and we don't use it. And if we can connect people back to their local environment, then they might want to do more and feel more proud of the fact that they drank that glass of wine to help something that they can actually see. Like, one oyster cleans 30 gallons of water per day, and my one glass of wine restored 25 oysters, which means that glass of wine is cleaning, you know, 750 gallons of water per day. And how cool is that? So, yeah.
That is very cool. And I mean, this is going to sound horrible, I know, but like it kind of relates to what you're saying is, you know, you see the commercials, like the old, well, you're probably a lot younger than I am, but like the Sally Struthers commercials of, here's these people in these other countries who are starving, and, you know, give your money to save these people. And what always bothered isn't the right word for it, but I'm like, but what about our people in our home that are starving? We have people right here that are starving. Mm-hmm. I would much prefer, you know, I mean, I feel bad for them and I would love to help them, but what, you know, we need to kind of take care of our own first and then expand out.
Yeah.
And
totally.
And
well, that was my whole thing, was like, you know, how can we care about the Amazon rainforest if we don't even care about our own harbor? You know, right. It starts at home. And then once we clean up our own house, it's like being like, oh, your neighbor, you know, like 4 miles down the road has a messy office. It's like, well, shoot, my own office is messy. Like, I can't worry about that.
Right.
So kind of start at home. And then once we get ourselves in order, then we can start to really, you know, understand how to help and how much that help makes a difference.
Yes.
Because, you know, if we never get to experience the joys of that help, then how can we understand how much, you know, enjoyment it would bring to someone else?
So. Right. Okay. So you kind of talked about it a little bit at the very beginning. So you're originally from New York, then you went to Boston. Now you live in Oregon, right?
Mm-hmm. So, so I'm originally from Southern California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then I moved to New York for finance. I climbed, you know, the Wall Street ladder, got to the top and was like, oh, it doesn't look great in here. Okay. I'm going to go do something else. So I had been planning to start a company for a while. Something in the fermented beverage industry. I didn't really know what. So then I quit that. I went to go start Proud Pour, and then I did that for 6 months in New York. I realized I wasn't super efficient in New York in those initial startup phases. There's just not enough room, like mentally and physically, to kind of experiment with things. So I moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts. That's where I met my business partner, who's been wonderful. He's kind of almost taken the reins in a lot of ways that I don't have necessarily the energy or patience to. The wine industry is extremely competitive, so he helps to manage our sales, which, you know, but he's also super smart, graduated top of his class from Harvard Law, went to Princeton undergrad grad and Brown for environmental studies, so for his master's. And so he's really helped manage the sales and the environmental side of things, and I've done more of the finance and sourcing and supply of the wine, so... We make a good
perfect
team.
I was gonna say, yeah. Sounds like a good team.
Yeah. So then from there I was like, I gotta get back out of Boston. Let me go back to Brooklyn, see if I can manage that a little bit better than Manhattan. So I tried that for a year and then realized that I gotta go out west. So right now I'm in Portland, which has been wonderful.
And how did you settle there?
We just got distribution in Oregon and Washington, and I thought I was gonna move to Berkeley, California.
Not a bad place to move to.
Yeah. So I thought I was going to move there, and then we got distribution there. So it's like, oh, I'll make a stop in Oregon, either, you know, Portland or Seattle for, you know, 6 months to launch the company. And then I ended up in Portland, and my neighbors have gardens with birds and bees, and the food and beverage industry there is, you know, kind of the headquarters of innovative entrepreneurial startup food and beverages. And just such a supportive community of entrepreneurs. And so, yeah, it's been really wonderful.
So you mentioned you actually have a business degree. So you have an undergrad and graduate from USC in business. And then you were initially an accountant?
So after I graduated, I got my master's in accounting and business tax. And then I was a CPA for a little bit. Okay. And then I bought two places. I bought a condo in Santa Monica when I was 24. I bought a condo in Santa Monica and a cabin in Big Bear. And then I held on to those, and I flipped those, held on to those for 5 years, crawled my way up the Wall Street ladder, worked in finance. And then when I was 29, I sold both of those properties and used that to start this company. So,
wow.
So, yeah.
Those are two great places.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, they're both gone. Yeah. I try not to think about it.
But now you have a new passion. Now you have, you know.
I do. Yeah. Yes.
So what got you into, you did home brewing. How did you I was drinking so much, so I figured I might as well make it myself.
Yeah. Well, my initial idea was I wanted to do like customized beers. So you can go onto a website and say, I want a pale ale or a stout or a porter or an IPA, but I want it mixed with cacao powder or coriander or lemon peel or orange, and then like choose and then upload your own label, and then I would make the beer and then ship it to you. That was like my initial idea for Proud Pour, which was funny, and then it totally changed, and I dropped the name, and then I was like, wait, Proud Pour still applies. And so I kind of circled back to that. And so I was looking to do that, but then I realized it's illegal to ship beer from manufacturer to consumer. You can do it in the wine industry, you can do it in other industries, you cannot do it in the beer industry for whatever reason.
Really?
So, so I thought, oh, it was only a matter of time before those laws change. So I'll just keep learning how to homebrew. In the meantime, I'll learn how to make meads and wines and ciders and kombuchas and pineapple, you know, fermented pineapple juice and anything I can ferment. I would like throw some champagne yeast or different yeasts into it and see what would happen. So I kind of got started with that, and then I had friends starting breweries, meaderies, cideries, wine brands, and kind of went to them for knowledge and guidance.
I got to go back. So now I'm all confused. So like, how do the beer clubs, because they're not the producer, they can ship, you know, like the beer of the month club?
Probably because they're probably the manufacturers ship it to some sort of other club. Same thing as
there's
like the wine.
Third wine. Third tier.
Yeah,
that's their third tier.
Operating as like a retail shop or something like that, you know, under the laws. So,
wow.
I don't know.
I tell you, the red tape of where you can ship, what you can ship, what you can't. I mean, seriously, there's things you can ship that are so much easier that shouldn't be easier to ship than alcohol. And
yeah,
it's like out of control. It's out of control. So you're not the winemaker for Proud Pour.
I've hired winemakers.
You've hired winemakers. Yeah. How much say do you have? You had said that you pretty much let the fruits talk and all that, but there's daily things that you need to do to make sure, you know, that you don't end up with, you know, vinegar.
Bad and, wine.
You
know, totally.
Well, how much say do you have in that, like, are you tasting it?
Oh,
are you making final decisions?
They come to me and they ask me how I want things done. So we guide them in all of that. And, you know, we make our wines vegan, and then they give me recommendations on what they think we should do for, you know, filtering the wine. We'll use bentonite clay or cross flow filtration and things like that. So we kind of just, you know, they come to me just like an accountant would, you know, like I kind of have an idea about what I want done, and then they just execute it in the best way with recommendations. So,
and you've already answered, you're going to start saving some more species. So I'm all happy to hear that. How quickly do you think, what's your target date for the whiskey for wolves next?
I don't know. We're going to talk to our distillers on Monday. So see kind of what we can make happen. I don't know. You know, it could take a little bit of time, but I guess we'll see.
And I don't know. I don't know the whole whiskey, you know, format. What's the turnaround time? You know, like, you know, harvest is, you know, for us, harvest is 2015. We release in late 2017 or 2018. What's the whiskey?
Yeah. We're just going to talk to them, chase some things that they've already done, see kind of where they're at. You know, with the wine, we actually got started with Shriners. You know, we like started out really simple just to see would people even like this concept before we invest 3 years of lead time and you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars creating a vintage. Let's just get a pallet. Literally got one pallet. It was $6,000 or something, or something like that. You know, it was very cheap. And so we might do something where it's kind of like, okay, here's, you know, some of them have some, you know, bulk spirits that we can kind of test out the market, see how people react. Do people really care about wolves? You know, do they like this style, or should we go and make it this style, kind of like as a, you know, minimum, what do they call them? Like in the tech industry, like a minimum viable product or something like that. There's like, you know, to test kind of the concept and then go back and like perfect it and refine. So, I don't know. But usually there's like a 2 to 3 to 5 to 10 year distilling aging process. So
And that's a whole different ball game, because like wine, somebody typically opens up a bottle of wine and, you know, they're drinking it that night or two nights, or I don't know how it lasts 3 nights, but, 3 nights later or whatever, and then they're looking for another bottle. Where the whiskey, they're probably not going to, you know, I don't know. They're not buying, you know, you might get somebody who buys a case of your wine, but probably not buying a case of whiskey, right?
Mm-hmm. Or I mean, there's just so much we don't know. So it's kind of, I guess we'll see really how the industry responds to things. So,
Well, I wish you luck because I'm all for the wolves too.
Awesome.
All right. So tell us where people can find Proud Pour on social media. You're everywhere as Proud Pour, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So proudpour.com, Instagram at Proud Pour, Twitter at Proud Pour, Facebook / Proud Pour. So it's all Proud Pour, P-R-O-U-D-P-O-U-R, not like I'm... Like, you're proud to pour your glass of wine, not you're proud to be poor.
I don't think anybody's proud to be O-O-R.
Some might be. I don't know.
And you don't sell direct to consumer. So,
well, wineworks.com is if you go to our website, you can see like buy online, and there's a link to wineworks.com that will ship directly to consumers.
Oh, okay.
So we don't from our site, but they do, and they actually have really competitive pricing. So,
okay. And do you have on your website, do you have a locator?
Yeah.
So
people can... we have a map, and you can enter in your zip code and find the 8 closest locations.
Okay. And you said 14 states?
Yep, 14 states. So Oregon, Washington, and then all the way from North Carolina to Maine, minus Connecticut. For whatever reason, Connecticut's been really, really difficult for us.
So. And so we can go into a restaurant and order Proud Pour, right?
In New York City, we've got, so you can see on our map if it's a restaurant or a retail shop, and then you can see if it's for the Pinot Noir or Sauvignon Blanc. So you can filter and find what you're looking for.
And on your website, when I see the pictures of your bottles, they have an oyster shell on it. Is that how they come, or is that just for the?
Yeah. So okay. It's been on and off, the oyster shells. We've had an on and off relationship, but, we just found, there's an event because a lot of the oyster shells can be used in restoration of the reefs. So it was kind of like, we would go to restaurants that weren't collecting with their projects, that would maybe only have like a bucket a week, instead of like, you know, a toter a week. But then that meant like me biking there in New York City over the Williamsburg Bridge to pick up a bucket and put it in my back basket and then bike it home and clean it in my bathtub. And it's just like not doable, right? There was an event in Washington, and Washington doesn't allow oysters from restaurants to be used in restoration. And so there was an event up there, and we collected 17,500 oyster shells from that event, and we'll be using those for our next vintage. So
you don't have that on the back of your bike.
No. Yeah, we rented a U-Haul and drove up, and it was a whole ordeal. But yeah.
So do you know what their reasoning is? Do they think that it's not processed correctly to restore?
Yeah, it's really funny because she said, I was like, well, why don't you cure them? Because, you know, Chesapeake Bay and New York Harbor and all that, they collect from restaurants. And of course, they don't put those shells directly into the water. They cure them outside for 6 to 12 months. So I was talking to my restoration project about that. And she was like, oh, they can do that. And I was like, how are you guys not talking to each other? Like, I thought we would share like trade basics, you know,
right.
Like the basics of what you do. So that's another thing we're going to work on is having someone on board full time as like an environmental advisor and consultant to all of our projects to make sure that they're doing the most efficient practices in what they're doing. So.
Maybe you just changed that too, and now Washington State will start.
So I've connected them, and hopefully they're underway with that. I'm gonna have to follow up and make sure they're doing that. So
Wow, because that you would think they would want to do that, like that would.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, I mean the projects do. That's so much easier because right now they're having to buy like the few leftover shells from a farm, shellfish farm that like they just happen to. Like there's a shellfish farm up there that will shuck oysters for canning. And so they'll take those shells, but it's like, once it gets onto a diner's plate, then there's all these issues with it. So, you know, and plus those shells come from all over the world, and they're not necessarily just from that one, you know, sound. So.
All right. So are you ready to play a game?
Sure.
All right. So I don't know if I explained it as the game of opposites. Okay. And I don't know if you watch Friends. Do you watch Friends?
I used to. Yeah. Okay. Totally. Yeah. I watched all those. All
right. So Phoebe plays the game with Joey. Right. He wants to know whether to go north or south, which is way too close to my experience of because we drove cross country. Never ever want to do that again. You know, and we were joking around, do we do the north or the south? So Phoebe does the opposite game, and it's supposed to make you not think, and that's how Joey knew whether he was going north or south. So I'm just going to say two things that are basically opposites, and you're not supposed to think. It's just supposed to give us a little insight into you. We start off with non-wine things. And then move on to the wine stuff.
Okay. All right. I'm only a little nervous.
No. Okay, ready? It's night or day.
Day.
Sunset or sunrise.
Sunrise.
Black or white.
White.
Walk or run.
Walk.
Food or drink.
Drink.
Old world, new world.
Old.
Sweet or dry.
Dry.
Bubbles or still?
Still.
Oak or stainless?
Oak.
Drink now, drink later?
Now.
Blend or varietal?
Varietal.
Vintage or non-vintage?
Vintage.
Cork or screw cap?
Cork.
Napa, Sonoma?
Sonoma.
Commercial or indigenous?
Indigenous.
I figured you'd say that. Bordeaux or Rhone?
Rhone.
Warm climate, cool climate?
Warm.
All right. See, that wasn't tough, right?
Do I get a result?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's interesting because some people are like, I can kind of predict what they're going to say by, you know, it's an insight into the personality, basically, but... Like, if you said day, right, versus night, and then you said sunrise versus sunset, that kind of makes sense. Although some people, they're like, day, sunset. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like, it's, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't had anybody say run yet. Nobody wants to run.
I thought about run. I was like, no.
nobody wants to run. The old world, new world is kind of split, that, you know, 50-50. I haven't had anybody say sweet. But other than that, yeah. And most people are varietal. Most people are varietal. And it's interesting, the size of the winery, I guess I should do a plot chart, but it seems to be the size of the winery determines whether it's commercial or indigenous. So like, I love the concept of using indigenous yeast, but I also am so nervous about what indigenous yeast can do to the wine, you know, the mystery that it can have. And we're too small at this point to risk it, you know, so we use commercial yeast, and the smaller wineries tend to, you know, when we need to, you know, if I could take a few barrels and throw in indigenous yeast and see the results of it, you know, without just, you know, possibly destroying my entire vintage, I'd be all for it. So, so that's interesting, but it's just, I like Phoebe, so it's something.
Oh my gosh, she's my favorite. And Chandler, they're all so great. Yeah.
I was just watching it before you got on, and it was the one where Phoebe's like, "He's your lobster."
I know. It's so funny. I love it.
Yeah.
I would always use that in high school if there was like a guy kissing a girl. I'd be like, "Oh, he's your lobster." Yeah, totally.
Actually on Etsy or something, I saw a shirt that said that, and I thought it was hysterical.
So funny.
Yes.
That's so funny. But lobster, I had a friend in the marine industry who studied for a year on lobster mating. She just like went to the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, I think, and studied lobster mating.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, apparently, like, when they mate, they shed their shells, and so they're entirely vulnerable. Vulnerable. And it's, like, kind of this magical thing.
All right. It's a true meaning of you're vulnerable when you're in love, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's like exposing your heart is really a big thing. Unfortunately, Berlin's phone decided it was time to die. She emailed me afterwards that the phone was dropped while on a previous trip and the screen cracked. Since getting the screen fixed, she has experienced issues with it, including not being able to turn it on and its battery life not being consistent. I am happy that we at least got to go through the end of the interview before the phone decided to kick off. I hope you enjoyed listening and learning how drinking wine can help save the environment in your own backyard.
Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D and P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!